Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, coming to you live on a Grey Cup Sunday morning. The Cleveland Cavaliers...
Go Bombers!
The Cleveland Cavaliers are streaking once again, and with any luck, I will be later tonight. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. Half a million businesses...
That one snuck up on me.
Half a million businesses connect using Zoom. Zoom doesn't sneak up on you. It's reliable. It's always there for you. It's a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And the man connecting with me now, interrupting my reads. Oh my goodness, is my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Everyone in the chat cannot believe we're live this early. Isaac just said this is way too early for a live pod. I haven't even taken my morning poop.
I
knocked one
either.
Out right before this one, Isaac, and it felt great. No, we had to go early, one, because, you know, we got to celebrate after yet another ass-kicking dub, a little bit scarier this time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we got to make sure we get this out of the way before you Grey Cup it up with your Winnipeg Bombers, because let's be clear, everyone, if you thought Justin, if you are a longtime listener and you thought Justin was incoherent after the 2016 title, this man, I'm not sure you'll be able to stand up if your boys take home the hardware today.
That really is the goal. Former Cincinnati Bearcat, shout out to him, Zach Collaros, won most outstanding player for the Bombers. They did their awards.
Really?
Yeah.
Throwback.
The man who used to throw to Travis Kelce has led the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to some glory, and he has a chance to win his second championship with Winnipeg. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about another team that is clearly on a championship path, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Carter.
I'll tell you what, Justin, I got so very high in that first half. I got too high. I got dangerously high. I was thinking thoughts that I shouldn't be thinking about this Cavs team. And in that fourth quarter, I was sweating so hard. It was like going to be the biggest sugar crash of all time.
It really had the potential to be that. There was a little bit of concern that I had going into that game, just because, you know, the Cavs were in a very tough situation from a scheduling standpoint. It was, once again, their third game in four nights, and their sixth game in nine nights, which I pointed out on Twitter last night. It was the weirdest thing, because with those six games and those nine nights, they alternated from home, road, home, road, home, road. There was no consistency. So this team was flying around all week, but they managed to go 4-2 over that stretch. I think some pretty impressive wins when you look at it, really taking care of business against some lesser teams, hanging around some contenders as well with Milwaukee and Utah. But on the whole, I feel like this has been a really successful week for the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, they 3-2 in that stretch of 5-7, and really, I mean, they were a tip in away from 4-1. And you know, they were super competitive with the teams that were the scariest on the schedule. I mean, they really pushed Milwaukee, they really pushed Utah. And then they just beat the hell out of the other teams. I mean, obviously Sacramento made it close at the end and kind of scared us, but you know, if you had said to me before the game that the closest Sacramento would get to after the first like 3 minutes of the game is an 8-point deficit, I would be like, all right, that's a good win. Yeah. Wire-to-wire win. And again, it was a wire-to-wire win, you know, and that's actually been what's really fun. And John Michael talked about it on the broadcast. He was like, this is a team that doesn't really give up the lead.
Yeah.
They have been uncommonly good, especially for a young team, but really just for a team at all, at absorbing those counter punches and regaining control.
Yeah.
And I don't think the second era LeBron teams were actually that good at that. They would let teams come all the way back often.
Yeah.
And the Cavs, for the most part, once they're up 20, and, you know, knock on wood here a little bit, but like once they get to that 15-20 point lead, they're pretty, like, I think the only time they've really blown a double digit lead was probably against the Suns in that first game when that was clearly kind of a fluky first quarter hot stretch. Like, for the most part, if they're playing well enough to get a big lead, they're not going to blow it. And that's really rare for a team at this age and experience level.
Yeah, and I think the other example I could think of is maybe the Golden State Warriors, where the Cavs were missing half of their rotation, so it was a little bit understandable, and Steph Curry can do that stuff. I mean, it's not the NBA Finals, so he's going to show up when the Warriors need him. A friend of the podcast, Joe G, tweeted out that the Cavs haven't trailed since the 247 mark of the first quarter versus Chicago on Wednesday. Like,
yep.
That speaks to your point, right? That the Cavs kind of are showing a level of consistency you would not attribute to teams this young. And my buddy Mike actually made a really good point to me, where the Cavs, they have an identity offensively, and they have these bread and butter plays. When it comes to Garland running the pick and roll, kind of navigating it with Allen and Mobley, there's so many actions they can run off of that initial pick and roll. And if you don't have the defensive capability to take that away from the Cavs, I think it really leaves you in a position where you're going to struggle to score enough points to keep up with the Cavs. Like, with the Cavs defense being so damn good, if you can't take away the Garland pick and roll, if you can't impact what Mobley does and kind of make the Cavs go to like their second and third option on a given play, you're going to die. Like, a lot of these better teams just, or these lesser teams, I should say, just don't have the ability to take that away. And
You look at the teams that did, you know, affect the Cavs offense, and it's been teams with really strong point of attack defenders and really good rim protectors.
Yeah.
You think Milwaukee, who can throw Drew on a guy like Darius and have people like Giannis patrolling the back line, even without Brooke Lopez.
Yeah.
You look at Utah, who have Rudy Gobert patrolling the paint, who made things difficult for them. And then even in this Kings game, you saw the inverse, where it's like, okay, they do have that point of attack bulldog and Davion Mitchell, who, oh my God, is amazing. Like a roster construction kind of changing player, it might be. Like, where you go, okay, maybe we don't need, maybe the Fox thing, like, we might need to get Mitchell more minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Fox did not have a great game, and Mitchell had an amazing one, so you can't make decisions off of one game. But still, they were able to – he single-handedly changed the shape of the game and made it competitive again. So, like, when you have those people, you can really futz with this Cavs team. But, like, you look at a team like, you know, Brooklyn, who doesn't really have that point-of-attack defender, the Cavs are going to get buckets with them all day long. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be a matter of whether they can get stops. Because, as Mike has said, if they cannot – mess up the Darius Allen pick and roll. And I think specifically the Darius Allen pick and roll, because I do feel like that is like, you know, we were kind of talking about in the Discord, someone said, is there anything better than a Kevin Love barrage of threes up 20? And you kind of made some joke about Darius cooking with like the pull up jumpers. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me, in my brain now, my idea of like peak Darius is two to three consecutive lobs to Jarrett. That is like they are hitting peak Cavs on offense.
Well, I think peak Cavs was those final minutes against the Kings in the first half. Like that was one of the most fun stretches of Cavs basketball I have ever seen. And I think you're right. Like I think it is the two-man game with Jarrett Allen that really kind of signals that, hey, this team is just going to get eaten alive. Because when teams are kind of trapping and you have that length on the perimeter and the help defense trying to contain Garland, that's when you start to see, okay, the Cavs go to Mobley kind of operating out of the short role, being that zone buster, being someone that can help facilitate and get some good looks because that primary action has been blown up. So
that's actually a really good point. It's like, yeah, like you kind of Mobley becomes like your he's kind of your second option, but like in the way of like he's the, oh, we're playing someone competent that can actually stop our primary action. And he is like such a great luxury release valve. But you're right, that really isn't his primary role when the Cavs are cooking.
Yeah, and in my opinion, it's an example of good roster construction, because when you have a primary action between two of your players, they have fantastic chemistry, and your plan B is going to Mobley, who is already showing like next level processing speed. As my voice blows out, see, this is what happens when you record in the morning. I am just gross. I am awful. But you know what? I'll try to work through it. But when you have Mobley as that release valve, as your kind of secondary option, like, that's exciting that is all in place this early on in the process. And the fact that the Cavs have an identity and they have bread and butter plays, like, this is a characteristic of a really good team. This is a characteristic team of a contender. And I don't think the Cavs are necessarily that yet, but I do think I've seen enough from the Cavs that I can shift my expectations. Like, I think this is now a team that can compete for home court. I think this is a team that might have a chance to win a playoff series this year and push maybe a team like Milwaukee. I would not favor them over Milwaukee. I think there's still a lot of lessons that need to be learned. I think against a team with that kind of length and that kind of defense, you need to have a secondary creator. I think you need to have someone like a Colin Sexton or another shot maker to help alleviate the pressure on Garland. But you know what? Like, that is so far ahead of schedule, and that is so far ahead of our expectations this year.
Yeah, and like, that's the thing, because I do feel like that comeback from the Kings kind of spooked some people. And I think the whole of Cavs Twitter was spooked, because they were feeling so high. And like, you know, if they had blown that game, then, you know, I think that's why everyone was like, I think everyone's going to feel really regret getting as hyped as they were if they had blown that game, you know? So everyone started like thinking like, oh, we need another creator. But it's like funny, because as currently constituted, this team is good enough to do all these things that you've talked about.
Yeah.
Right now, they are good enough to compete for home court. Right now, they are good enough to win a playoff series. I'm there.
Yeah, I am too.
And like, that's crazy. Because even, a week and a half ago? Like, we had, maybe it was 2 weeks on, Mort was on for you and mentioned winning a playoff series. And I was like, okay, easy, buddy. And now I'm here. It's crazy that, like, and thank God Mort won't actually listen to this to gloat that he was right. But it's just hard to fathom how much they've changed our expectations just step by step by step. It wasn't a light switch thing. They've just kind of been like earnestly forcing us into believing more and more and more despite our best guarded intentions.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think you see growth with this team like from week to week, and it's what you would expect, right? Where the growth isn't necessarily linear. Like, some guys will have setbacks. They will have off nights. But when you have so many good young players, they make up for it. Like, Lauri Markkanen was having a great week. He struggled against the Kings. He wasn't that effective. But in the grand scheme of things, it didn't really make a huge difference because Isaac Okoro is now all of a sudden kind of having a moment in these last three games. He's playing better. Garland was in complete control. Mobley and Allen were great, right? Like, you don't need every single guy to be great on a nightly basis because they have so much talent. And on the nights where the offense isn't going, their defense is so legitimate. It is so good that it keeps them in games. Like, the game against Milwaukee was ugly. Like, they could not get anything going. And they went toe-to-toe against a really good team, which to that point had not lost a game with Giannis, Middleton, and Jrue Holiday in the lineup. I think we've seen enough this season. We're already over a third of the way through this year. I think we've seen enough to shift some expectations here for the Cavs and say, okay, you know what? I think this is a team that can compete for home court. I think if they do get home court, they might have a pretty decent shot at winning a first round series. Now, they may fall short of that. We don't know. Injuries, COVID, there's so many things that can impact a season. But
God, are you just sitting here just like, oh, I'm just like knocking on wood every day. Like, please no injuries. Please no injuries. Please no injuries. Like, obviously, we've already suffered a pretty major one in the form of Colin Sexton. But like, you know, they are at this point where it is a fragile ecosystem.
Yep.
You know, like, they can handle nicks and bruises. They can't handle, I don't think, a month of lost Darius, you know?
Yeah.
Though I guess they handled, you know, 3 weeks of lost Mobley, though not, you know, not perfectly. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's the thing that, like,
There was only four games.
Yeah, well, it was funny that I was kind of looking at the injury report before this game, and they didn't have Rashawn Holmes on the Kings side. I'm like, yep. Okay, Cavs have had a few games recently where folks are missing at least a rotation piece. So I'm thinking that's like, wait, almost everyone's always missing a rotation piece. Like, that's just basketball, you know? And like, so like, you know, the Cavs are going to have those stretches where they're dinged up, and just like they did last time, they're going to have to find ways to survive them.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're going to have to do what they've been doing on this stretch, which is they are competing at a level that that gives them the cushion to go through those lean times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I have such a strong belief in this team's ability to kind of endure and stick in that conversation for the 4 or 5 spot. I don't know if 3 is going to be doable, but the thing is, they're 3 games back of the 1 seed, Justin.
It's crazy.
One, how compressed this league is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And two, like, just they won't go away. I mean, Basketball Reference says they're the number one team in the East.
Yeah.
Based on how they performed relative to their schedule. Like, it just feels like...
Yeah, if you look at anything that's schedule adjusted, like, it has the Cavs so high, right? And that's one thing that I think is really working in their favor is the schedule is now lighting up, right? Like, it's going to be easier throughout the rest of the season. So banking all these wins when they did, maybe a team like Philadelphia makes a move and they're a better team down the stretch. They might not be able to catch the Cavs despite being a better team on paper because, you know, they have to go through some tougher games and the Cavs have it easier, right? Like, there's a real opportunity here. And I look at Monday night's game and I know the Cavs really handle business against Miami in Miami, but they've found ways to start winning recently. Like, Miami has been playing better basketball. They handed Giannis his first loss of the season with Holiday and Middleton, as I said. They beat Miami by 9 points. They blew out Chicago by 26 points. And this is without Jimmy and Bam Adebayo, right? Like, this is what good, well-coached teams do, is they find ways to make adjustments with guys out of the lineup. Cavs might have to do that at some point this season. I think they already have with Colin Sexton, right? Like, they had to change their identity. There's a little bit of a learning curve after he went down and an adjustment period for the offense. But you know what? Like, they've found a new identity. They found ways to win. And that's what Miami's doing. I mean, Duncan Robinson, 26 points last night. Like, that game against Miami on Monday, for fourth place in the Eastern Conference, you move up in the standings, you'd have 2 wins over Miami, which would be huge. But I think they're going to have to fight like hell for that. I think that's going to be a really, really competitive game.
Here's an inside NBA Twitter thing. I'm looking forward to Matt Moore tweeting, the Cavs now own the tiebreaker over the Miami Heat.
That is niche. That is real niche.
That is a Matt Moore tweet that I'm on. I love his way too early tiebreaker talk.
Yeah.
It'll be like the 9th game of the year and he's into it.
Well, he's pointing out the significance of all these regular season games, which I know we're hitting repeat here, but like, I really think with the play-in, like, the regular season has meaning again. Like, all of these games are really, really important, and you need, if you're the Cavs, you need to come out and win a lot of these games against the Eastern Conference teams, which, for the most part, they've done this year. Like, they've been really, really good against the East, and, man, you're showing the highlights right now. Isaac Okoro, over the last 3 games, has been so much better. I know he's hitting some 3-pointers, almost 43% over the last 3 games during this winning streak. But to me, what really stands out is just his activity both in transition and as a cutter in the half court. And this is, I think, one of the benefits of not playing Utah with Rudy Gobert back there, not playing Milwaukee, who blows up everything with their length. Against some of these teams that are also trying to find an identity, that they're trying to make the playoffs or not as sound defensively, I think there's a real opportunity for Okoro to get some easy buckets, to play off of the other teammates that he has. Like, I really do think that Okoro has an opportunity to become a more reliable offensive contributor, even if his offensive skill set hasn't progressed in a major, major way.
No, and, like, I mean, really all we wanted to see was a few, you know, like, there are going to be games where he really tanks the spacing, right? But what we want to see is that he can have games where he shows this. This is, like, nights where Isaac scores 16 points and 20 points, that's so important for him.
Mm-hmm.
Both in terms of showing his long-term upside and just giving him, like, something to build off of. You know, that was, I think, what was so discouraging about his early stretch of the year after coming back from the hamstring injury. It was just like, man, there just isn't much to work with right now. You know, the finishing was bad. The handle was bad. The jumper was busted. And it's like, well, what is he even supposed to like, you know, use as a base to get comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting, you know, and it does feel like the message to him and Jetty is run. Just go real fast. Teams are, you know, and I wonder, I'm now getting pretty speculative, but I wonder if the way that, you know, how many shots the Cavs block and alter that kind of, I think teams kind of mess up their floor balance against the Cavs because of all the volleyballing that happens around the paint where, you know, they're just kind of, the ball's just being tapped around and it feels like Jetty's getting a ton of leak out. It feels like Isaac's getting a ton of leak outs as teams aren't quite sure if they've got possession still.
Yeah.
You know, and once the Cavs secure the board, they've got two point guards who know how to push and know how to hit ahead really, really well. And those guys are getting really, really easy looks. Isaac's finishing in transition has been much, much better. He had a great little duck in finish against Minnesota in the half court where he's kind of using his angles again.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing is like Isaac is a player, and we've talked about this last year. He's a player who needs to generate the angle because he's not explosive enough as a leaper and as a finisher, nor with his handle. He's got to use his body to create the right angle for him just to go up with the layup.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't do that, it's going to look ugly. And he's starting to do that again. He's starting to find those easy creases to finish around the basket. And then the three pointer's been good enough. You know, I mean, it's only six attempts over two games, so I'm not like losing my mind over him hitting three shots, but like it's just enough to stay out there. Like I think with his, and we asked Dave before this, how much does he have to do to be able to be on the floor and not tank things offensively with how good he is defensively? I'd say a little less than this, but like you want him just to be opportunistic, and that's what he's been in these last two games.
I agree. And when you have kind of a core three with Garland, Mobley, and Allen that works so well together, like you want to surround them with as much talent as possible. And when you're looking to acquire talent in the NBA, whether it be through the draft, free agency, trades, like you're never, or I shouldn't say never, but most of the time you're not going to get an ideal fit, right? Like you're going to have guys that do certain things well, and they're going to have to learn how to adapt their games to work alongside those guys. And I think Okoro, on paper, you're like, okay, he's a shaky three-point shooter, good defensive player. You can see the potential with Mobley and Allen on that end of the floor, but is it going to impact the spacing? Is it going to impact your ability to kind of run some of those pick and rolls and those good plays? And I think what we've seen so far is enough adaptation from him, enough kind of sacrifice, enough understanding of what he can and can't do. And right now, I think you're right. It's getting out in transition. It's being a cutter, being a connecting piece. I think his passing in the half court is good when he gets the ball as well. He's someone that has his head up. And I think another,
put a little more zip on the passes as he swings around the perimeter too, which is really important. You know, like making sure you catch the ball and immediately rotate it. Mm-hmm. When the defense is beat, because the reality is the second he holds it, people are just going to keep rotating over. He knows that.
Yeah.
He knows that they're not going to close out hard on him. They're gonna sprint over to the corner to go find Jetty or Darius. So he's got to get the ball and make a very fast decision and pass with pace. And those kind of things are very, very minute details, but they're the difference between Darius getting a wide open three and a kind of open three.
Yep.
And I'd much rather have Darius take the wide open ones.
Yeah, I would too, because then he's able to kind of do that little jog forward and kind of showboat, and that's a lot of fun. I love the skip. But I think Laurie's another example of that too, right? Like on paper, not an ideal fit, but he's got a skill set and he's made adjustments to his game to work alongside those guys. And I think moving forward, whether it's acquiring another veteran player or someone that can help supplement this core, whether it's reintegrating Sexton in the lineup, like we have to understand that there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve with some of these guys. But as long as the lineup overall is effective, as long as you can see that growth and it's going in the right direction, I'm okay with that. Like I don't think it's the end of the world. And you look at Okoro with the starting five, it's up to 127 minutes now, Carter. They have a plus 19.3 net rating.
Plus team of 22 year olds and 23 year olds and 20 year olds. And they're doing that with imperfect personnel.
Yeah.
That hasn't all played great. And you would think if you had told me Okay, Isaac's going to get a shot at the shooting guard position to start with the team, like no matter what way it would be, to start the year. And you would tell me that Isaac would be mired in a pretty terrible shooting slump to start the year. I mean, I what is he still shooting from three? It's not good.
No.
He is at, oh my gosh. ESPN is the hardest like primary dashboard to read in the world. He is at 24% from three. And they're playing him with Mobley and Allen. And I would say, okay, the offense sucks then. Cool.
Yeah.
Hope the defense can hang, and that really hasn't been the case. The offense is functional.
Yeah.
To your point to start the podcast, there are ways to muck it up for great defenses.
Yep.
But it is functional and it is opportunistic. It takes advantage when the defense makes mistakes because of the collective IQ on the floor out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And I think some credit does need to go to both Kobe Altman and JB Bickerstaff for like acquiring guys that might be a little unconventional with their fit with the core, or playing guys that, you know, on paper you would have some concerns, but we just kind of trust that with our player development, with our coaching, we're going to find ways to use your strengths and hide your weaknesses. And I think the Cavs have done a really good job of that. And obviously it helps to have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. I think from a team building perspective, having those two back there allows you to take some chances on acquiring talent. Maybe a guy hasn't been a great defensive player, but you have enough confidence that he's going to stay in position. You have confidence in the personalities. Like, I think that's the biggest part of this equation, is finding guys that are willing to sacrifice, that aren't necessarily completely focused on their own numbers, and are willing to kind of be part of a collective and be more than the sum of their parts, right? Like, I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked in all this is, and we kind of questioned over the last couple of years how much weight you should put on this, but acquiring guys and drafting guys that all have reputations as hard workers, like Evan Mobley after summer league, he's tired of getting bumped around. He goes to the Cavs and says, I want to add weight before the season, and adds a bunch of strength, functional strength before the year. Darius Garland, you can tell how much work he's put in. Colin Sexton puts the work in. Isaac Okoro, one of the hardest workers. Jared Allen very clearly has worked hard on his game. And that's the And that's the kind of stuff when your young guys are that motivated, they're putting the work in, they're sacrificing, there's no real focus on their own numbers either. Like, Colin Sexton was doing all the little things. Sure, he was still the leading scorer, but he was playing off ball, he was cutting, he was playing good defense. Like, he was really working his butt off. Garland in these games, like, he's running the pick and roll and says, you know what, like, if Mobley or Allen are open every single time, I'm just going to make the right play. I'm going to get that easy bucket. I don't need to have 20 and 12. I'm fine with, or 20 and 7. I'm fine with 12 and 12. I'm fine with 16 and 12, right? Like, it's just making the right play and playing basketball the right way without a focus on their numbers. And, you know, that's something that's really, really special, in my opinion, when you talk about a young team.
Yeah, culturally, they just feel so sound right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so exciting, man. Can we talk about Evan Mobley's post game and how effing good it is? I was told this would take a while. I was told that he was like, he was a little robotic. He didn't really have a go-to move. I was told that that wasn't his game, that he was going to be a face-up kind of guy.
Yeah.
And one, this dude likes mashing people. If he has a size mismatch, he likes putting his shoulder into him. You can tell. He kind of cherishes that kind of ugliness. And then he has such touch on his floater, and he's so tall with such a high release point on his turnaround that if he gets a deep seal, I believe the ball is going in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there aren't that many fours that can guard him.
Yeah.
And then his patience on the footwork. I mean, he is getting dudes up and under left and right and step throughs and like drawing fouls that way. Like, he is so much further along as a post player than I thought. Am I wrong here?
You're not wrong. And I think Like he's further along than he was at the start of the season. Like he didn't
yeah, that's
have
a
as
great point.
He didn't have as much confidence in the post game early on. I think you highlighted the play, but there was one where he was backing in, and there was like three guys kind of reaching in, like they weren't doing like a hard double or anything like that. But you know what? They were trying to like impact that post possession, and he just reads the defense perfectly. Like even though he's not in complete control physically, he's still putting his body into guys while keeping his head up and looking at where the defense is and seeing if there's an opportunity to, you know, find an open teammate, or if that's not available and it is still a one-on-one, he's going up and he's finishing pretty well. And some of the moves he's doing are so advanced, like the shot making, the turnarounds. Like there's shades of Kevin Garnett, Chris Bosh in his turnaround game, and like it's
and
so
he's
hard
taller
to
than those dudes. By the way, he's so, taller than these dudes.
It's so hard to bother his shot. Like it's really, really incredible. And that in season growth, I think once again, like ties into what I was just talking about. Of like these dudes put the work in, and throughout the season they've got better.
I wonder with Mobley if part of the thoughts we had about his physicality as a player were projections based on the way of his personality. He is so gentle spoken. He doesn't seem like a big wild personality, and I think we had this idea like, okay, he's kind of a meek guy, so that he'll be kind of a meek player, and that's not the case. Mm-hmm. He does like to bump, and you know what I really like about him. That in his post game, you mentioned keeping his head up. The other thing is no panic.
Mm-hmm.
You can't speed him up. There are a lot of post players in this league that are pretty capable scorers, but when you flash a help defender down at them in a kind of a fake dig, not a real double, but a fake dig just to keep him honest, they will get rid of the ball. They're like, okay, double's coming, gotta go. And Mobley kind of waits. He's like, listen, if you're not going to come all the way down, I'm not getting rid of this ball.
Right.
And if you do come all the way around, I'm gonna squeeze the ball real damn tight. I'm going to use my pivot foot, and I'm gonna find an open cutter or an open shooter. And that level of patience at his age is almost more important than any footwork or finishing. The fact that you can't panic him with scheme.
The polish at this age is absurd. Like if with the team as a whole, like the fact that Mobley, Allen, and Garland in particular are this good this early on is crazy. But Mobley for sure, like there's no way. Like I've decided that I don't think I can even victory lap on this team because I was so low on them relative to where they are. Like I know I was probably higher than consensus, but like they are so much better than any of my projections that it's hard to do a victory lap because I didn't see this coming. I didn't see Evan Mobley being this good this early, this kind of composure, his ability to improve throughout the season. And I think your point about his personality is a really good one. Like, I think we see guys around the league that, you know, they'll show aggression. Like, they will do the yelling, they'll do the flexing and whatnot.
I think of the Morris twins.
Well, I was actually going to say Anthony Davis. Like, is someone that...
Oh, interesting. Who kind of, you know...
Who he'll find an opportunity to, you know, like, kind of flex or yell and whatnot, but on a possession-to-possession basis, like, he's not showing consistent aggression. He doesn't really have that dog mentality, and I think that's one of the issues with the Lakers, is they expected him to step up and be the number one guy, and he hasn't done that. Mobley, coming out of college, already has kind of that consistency, that motor, that every single play I'm going to make an impact, and I don't need to flex, I don't need to yell at guys, I'm just going to completely erase your confidence. Like, look at what Anthony Edwards has done this season. He credited Kristaps Porzingis for being the best rim protector he played. I wish someone asked him about the Cavs after they played, because you know what? Like, Isaac Okoro on him with the length of Mobley and Allen behind him, they disrupted him. De'Aaron Fox had a stretch of 30-point games coming into the game against the Cavs, and back-to-back situation.
Got benched the final 16 minutes of the game.
Yeah, back-to-back situation for them as well. Like, we can point out the kind of the rest and travel factors and scheduling factors for other teams, but it was very clear that they were bothering him. Like, there were times when he's going up and, oh my God, it's Evan Mobley. Like, I think there's a learning curve for the league.
Yeah, these point guards who can't shoot that well, there's just no chance, man. No. There's just no chance.
Nope. There really isn't. So I think that's a really, really exciting proposition when you look at Mobley. And you know what? Like, there's growth throughout the team. Like, I think Okoro, some of it's getting healthier. Some of it's understanding what he can and can't do in the lineup. Garland, I think, has improved so much throughout the season. Like, I tweeted this out, but his relocation game. Like, he started this season as still ineffective, non-aggressive off-ball player. There was a lot of standing around. And now, like, the give and goes. Like, he gives it up to Allen or Mobley, and he's immediately looking to get into a passing lane to create an opportunity, either for himself or others. Like, there was that one give and go with Allen where he gave it to Allen, kind of shot out to the three-point line, got the ball back, and immediately hit Allen cutting to the basket. Like, this is the kind of stuff that we really want to see. Like, this is the, when you talk about like Steph giving him credit, this is Steph-like stuff with the relocation. And that is so important for him to add, because at some point you're going to have another playmaker. At some point, whether it's Colin Sexton, whether it's bringing in another like big wing that can do some playmaking, learning how to play off of guys is going to make those transitions easier. Like, that's why the Warriors were able to integrate Kevin Durant so seamlessly, beyond the fact that he's one of the best players ever. But that's why every time they bring in a piece, there's not really a learning how to play with Steph, your turn, my turn, LeBron and Wade type situation, or even a Kyrie and LeBron. Like, that, yeah, that was something Kyrie had
only
to learn.
Only players who are just not smart basketball players.
Yeah.
Like, can't work with that team. And, like, it is so funny how basketball just, like, IQ begets IQ begets IQ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Darius hadn't really played with a ton of, like, in an offense that was humming like this before. That could hum without him dribbling the ball. And where he would be found, like, Colin was still developing as a passer. Larry would be one of those, and Kevin would have been those great connecting pieces, but they were hurt all the time. And, like, you know, If your off-ball movement is not incentivized by results, it's really hard to continue that process. And now that it is, you know, incentivized by all these players who are really, really good connective playmakers, Kevin's healthy. Mobley is an amazing passer at his position. He's got Rubio now. He's got all these players who can get him the ball when he relocates. That, like, the juice is just now worth the squeeze for him.
Yep.
So it's like, he is now incentivized to do it and seeing those good results. So why would he stop?
Exactly. And man, like, this is so far beyond what I expected for this season. Like, I feel so good about the identity of this team, the direction of the team, like the talent they have, the fact that the young core is playing so well together. They legitimately might have two All-Stars, and we're coming up on All-Star voting season. And if they do get up to that four seed, if they do have enough team wins, like, I think they probably have three worthy candidates. I don't think Mobley would get in this year. But
they're going to give him an invite to the Rising Stars game and make sure. And, like, that's the thing that is kind of fun about this All-Star weekend that it is in Cleveland is, no matter what, we're going to get a lot of involvement. Like, I would be stunned if Darius isn't invited to the three-point shootout.
Oh, that's a good point. That would be a lot of fun.
I don't think the Cavs have a dunk contest contender anymore, mm-hmm. Now that our dear friend Larry has departed us. But, like, they're going to find ways to get these dudes involved at All-Star
Weekend. Poor Larry, man. I was listening to Zach Lowe, and he was talking about the Blazers trading Larry, and I'm like, come on, like, I hope
to be on a winner.
Yeah.
He just has not had he's had one season of winning basketball, and it happened to be the most miserable Cavs season ever. I would love to see that, but you're going to see at All-Star Weekend, the Cavs are going to get involved. I'll bet Mobley's invited to the skills competition for the bigs. Like, we're going to get to see these dudes get to show out because it's in Cleveland. And I do think a couple of them, I think the Cavs, I mean, over under 1.5 All-Stars for the Cavs. I mean, what do you think it's going to be in practice?
I'm taking over. I think there's a real opportunity to win enough games where they're going to have a hard time not giving two to the Cavs. Like, and the other part of this equation too is kind of looking at the landscape of the league, right? Like, Bam Adebayo has missed a lot of time. Jimmy Butler's missed a lot of time. Like, unless he gets fan voted in, like, I guess it depends. If he's back tomorrow against Cleveland and stays healthy, obviously Jimmy Butler should be in. He's having a fantastic season, but we don't know how much time he's going to miss. Bam's been out.
Yeah.
I think Darius and Jared have a really good shot.
Yeah, if I had to pick one,
I think it's Allen. But at the same time, like, I do feel like Darius has really been the straw that stirs the drink. Like, you look at
the center position being a little light, and in coaches, I know you don't have to have multiple centers that make the team anymore, but yeah. Like, still, I still think coaches will care about that. Yeah, I mean, you can do a quick count. You know, you're gonna have Harden and KD. That's two. They're definitely going to be there. Now, do you have two Bulls? Do you have LaVine and DeRozan?
Ooh, I think I do, yeah.
I think you probably do. That's four. You definitely have Jimmy.
Do they count as
forward
or guards? That'll be the big thing is
if they count as forwards. DeRozan will be a forward. LaVine will be a guard.
Okay.
Guarantee it. So there's four. Then you have Jimmy. That's five. You have Embiid. That's six.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're down to the 7 through 10 range. I mean, does Beal make it? He hasn't even been that good this year. I mean, I know he's their best player on a team that's overperformed, but maybe. LaMelo's missed a bunch of time.
Yeah.
Trey is definitely in. That's going to be 7. Probably Tatum and Brown will make it. That's 8 and 9, ooh, whether they should or not, but I think they're going to make it.
I don't think they will.
I think coaches like those guys.
I think coaches like those guys, too, but I don't think... Like they're the 10 seed right now. Brown's missed so much time.
That is fair, but let's say it's 9. Okay, let's say it's 9. Raptors won't have one.
No,
I don't think the Knicks will have one.
But you know, like the Knicks.
I don't
and
think,
Raptors.
I think they. You know, they might. Randall might get a vote just because Knicks media attention, but I don't think he deserves it. Pacers don't deserve one. Magic don't deserve one. Pistons don't deserve one. So like all of a sudden, you've got a few more spots than you might normally have. Yeah. It's a weird year is what I'm saying. So like even if Beal gets in, even if Brown gets in, the Cavs have a really good shot. So just after having done that, you know, crunch those numbers, I think they're both getting in.
Man, I hope it's a good all-star jersey because I cannot wait to get my Darius jersey. I cannot wait to get my Allen all-star jersey. Man, like, they are playing at a level that deserves it. Like,
did I miss the chat's blowing me up? I forgot the Bucks. Giannis. Giannis and Drew will also make it.
Well, Giannis and Middleton, I think, because Middleton's been...
Giannis and Middleton. Drew's been missing time, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think of the guys. Yeah, the chat is very deservingly blowing you up there.
sorry, guys.
But you know what? Either way, I think there's a really good chance. The All-Star game being in Cleveland, I think is nice and fitting. I think that would have got the Cavs some goodwill, but the reality is, like, they're one of the best stories in the NBA. Like, it's...
Does All-Star have 13 this year? I'm sorry, I forget. Is it still 12?
I think it might be 13 still. That's actually a really good question. But, I mean, for everyone listening, vote like hell. Let's make sure that we are getting as many votes for Garland, Allen, and even Mobley. You know what? Like, I think Mobley's playing really well, and if they were the Utah Jazz of last year, where they were the clear number one seed, I think people would be talking about his impact and whatnot. But I think if you're looking at driving factors, I'd give the nod to Garland and Allen. You look at the on-off differential. Like, Garland, the team is 14.2 points better with Garland on the court. They're better offensively by 13 points. They're better defensively by 1.2. I think a lot of that comes with playing with Mobley and Allen. That context is important. But after that, Mobley is second at 8.7. Like, there is a massive gap between those two. And I think it's part of that's due to Sexton being out, and you just don't have as much offense when Garland's on the bench. But like, he's still doing it, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, when we make our jokes about Şengün and his per 36 stats, which he averages more than 6 fouls per 36, that's probably why he doesn't play 36. But when you look at kind of like these per 40 minute per 100 possession numbers and whatnot, there's a difference between actually going out and doing it. Defenses look at you differently. They try to take things away. You play against better defenders. So Garland actually taking that leap, I really do feel like he's a deserving all-star this season.
Yeah. And what if I told you, Justin, that Chris Middleton was slashing 41 and 35?
I would say he is on my dynasty basketball team in fantasy, and I'm very aware.
So all I'm saying is the Bucks, I mean, they might get Drew in because he actually has played more than Middleton. I got mixed up there. He's played two more games than Middleton. Either way, like, I just think that it's more open than it's been in the past, where like it's felt like in the past, like just because of the way that the league has gone, it's like, okay, we got 10 like absolute no doubters on each team. And like it feels a lot more open this year because of the surprise teams like the Cavs and the Wizards, these teams that are kind of overperforming expectations. And then you got these underperformers, you know, like I really don't see why you'd give, you know, Randall an all-star spot this year.
No, he doesn't deserve one.
So like
no one on the Knicks deserves one.
And really the Celts don't either. Like they're not playing well enough.
Yeah.
So I think that the Cavs do have a legitimate shot, and I'm interested to see if the coaches reward this team.
I'd
be surprised if we get a starter in just because, you know, the no national TV games. Oh, well,
I don't think we get any starters. I don't think you're going to get enough fan votes for it.
It's just, yeah. There's not enough exposure still.
Yep.
You know,
they don't have a national TV game. Like
not a one, guys. So like, you know, I think any of that stuff is coming, you know, down the line once the league, you know, smartens up and gets these guys some national exposure. But in the interim, like, you're going to need the coaches to kind of reward you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will. I think that coaches love dudes like Jared Allen, specifically, you know, like a dude who just plays his role, works really, really hard, isn't afraid to get dunked on. Like, it's all that stuff that coaches just, you know, foam at the mouth over. So I think the Cavs are getting two. I really do. And we'll see if the league makes us angry or not.
Yeah.
It is 12 players a team, by the way. It is not 13.
And let's cut to the chase. The most important thing is winning. Like, you look at this week, big game against Miami on Monday. Then they play Houston. Then they go on the road to play Milwaukee and Atlanta. Like, these are really, really big opportunities. If you can bank those two wins and you move up to 18 and 12 through 30 games, which, oh my God, I can't believe we're saying this, like, that is going to make an impression. Performing well and getting wins is going to make an impression on the coaches you play against. Like, if they remember just Garland and Allen carving them up and Mobley just blowing up everything they were trying to do offensively, like, coaches, like, they're not going to sit around and when they're casting their all-star ballot or when media members that cover the teams, they're not going to sit there and watch tons and tons of hours of film just to kind of inform their voting decisions. They're going to remember the impression you made when you play against them, right? So when you look at the media vote, when you look at the coaches vote, like, the biggest thing is just winning, because historically speaking, when it comes to All-Star, that's what gets rewarded, and that's also what makes a big impression on them. So I think for the Cavs to continue to play well, to not play down to the level of their competition, they're the only team in the league that hasn't lost to a below 500 team. Like, that's the stuff that really, really matters in these kind of conversations.
Yeah, it does. I'm really, really excited about this team, man. I cannot believe they're doing this. Five of their last eight games, they have led by at least 29 points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what?
Ooh, man. This is
six of their last nine, they've led by at least 25. What?
Man.
Like, what is going on, man? I just, like, this is contender stuff. Contenders kick the crap out of teams this bad. Like, I know that, like, a lot of, like, I'm not going to be there, like, again, it's just going to take a while for me to get to, like, they can actually, like, win multiple playoff series in these. And by the way, once you can win two playoff series, you're a finals contender, because now you're just down to one series away.
Yep.
And anything can happen in one series. I'm not there yet, but man, like, when are they going to stop making me get to those places that I didn't think I was going to be comfortable getting to?
Here's the thing, Carter, and I tweeted this out last night. Mobley has been back for 9 games. Since then, Mobley, Allen, and Garland have a plus 20.1 net rating.
Jesus. Amazing.
On the season, in 400 minutes, I'm rounding up a little bit because it's 395, they have a plus 12.9 net rating.
In their last 9 games, all in, they're plus 13 net rating.
Like, this is significant. This, like, if anyone's getting irresponsible out there, I don't blame them. Like, this seems like something that's sustainable. this isn't based on fluky hot shooting from three or opponents not shooting well from three for a season like the Knicks last year, and you got a bunch of older players that just kind of found their stride and whatnot. No, like, yeah, you have steadying presences in Rubio and Love. I think Rubio's already come back to earth for like a month now, and this is just what you expect with Ricky, which is, you know, a little bit of uneven finishing, a little bit of turnovers, that sort of thing. But
I thought he had a good game yesterday, though.
I did, too. I think overall he's still been an impactful player, and he still makes a difference. I would extend him. That's a conversation for another day, but I would certainly keep him around. But, you know, like, as much as the veterans help, it's the young guys that are driving this. And I mean, this is why you hear people compare them to the Warriors young core and how they were assembled. This is why
when you say people, do you mean you?
People are saying Carter. Good people. Many, the best many people.
Good, the best people. Good are people. They're that were just like the Warriors.
Good people. The best people. They're all saying it, Carter. They're saying Warriors East.
It must mean something that I'm no longer telling you to shut up when you say it.
The big three is big, Carter. It's a beautiful place to be. And you know what? We still have so much to talk about, but we should probably save it for Tuesday's podcast. For everyone listening live, thank you so much for your support. I am going to be in rough shape tomorrow, win or lose, with the Blue Bombers. But if anyone is interested in watching a little ESPN news today, Grey Cup, go check it out. Go root for Winnipeg. But if you want to support us, do so by subscribing, liking on YouTube, click the notification bell. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can do so by leaving a screenshot of that review at chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cats.